Coming up today on Growing Bolder, he was a pioneer on network TV. And now at age 90, he's the oldest person in history to summit the largest freestanding mountain in the world. Dr. Art Uihlein will share his prescription for a healthy and active life. And the risk of not taking risk, how walking away from a successful corporate career led to a life she dreamed about as a child. I'm Mark Middleton, and this is Growing Bolder. Well, I am more than a little excited for this next interview because this guy pretty much embodies what Growing Bolder is all about. He is a true pioneer in more ways than one. This is the guy who revolutionized medical communication back in the 1970s when he became the Today Show's family doctor. And for more than 20 years, he was the nation's top medical correspondent. He appeared on more than 2,500 episodes using network television to promote public health education. And as you guys probably know, I often end speaking presentations with the question, who is your primary healthcare provider? And by that time, if they were paying attention, they do know the answer. They are. Now, I may have subconsciously stolen that whole bit from him because he was the first TV doctor to share how lifestyle can reduce risk factors for multiple diseases, how breast self-exams can help detect cancer, and his annual month-long series on weight loss changed the lives of viewers nationwide. Dr. Art Uihlein retired in 1998, but he did not go quietly into that good night. In fact, since then, he has visited 83 countries, and he's climbed several mountains, including the world's highest freestanding mountain, Africa's Mount Kilimanjaro, not three times, but four, because just a few weeks ago, at the age of 90, he became the oldest person in history to reach the summit of Mount Kilimanjaro. And he didn't do it just to challenge himself. He did it to inspire other older adults to get off the couch. He did it to raise money for school lunch programs in Tanzania. And he did it to put a few miles on his new artificial hip joint. Passion, purpose, perseverance personified. Let's welcome Dr. Art Uihlein. Art, how you doing today?
Well, I am doing great. Every day is a gift. I treat every day as a gift, as a new opportunity. So you won't hear a bad word out of me.
Well, what a gift you've given us by spending some time with us today. Let me ask you, have you recovered? How do you feel? Because it wasn't that long ago.
Well, I feel phenomenal. Up here, I feel phenomenal. And that has to do with the fact that the brain has this strange way of erasing painful memories. It was hard. It was cold. It was uncomfortable. And I don't remember any of that. Well, I remember it, but the pain and the emotion are gone. What I do remember is cutting a birthday cake at 19,341 feet.
Happy birthday to you.
Oh, look at this. Look at that.
I remember my team of 20 guys singing and dancing, welcoming me back into camp each day. You mentioned I had climbed three times earlier. I don't remember the pain from any of those climbs because if I had remembered it, I would not have gone this time.
Well, you know, you make a good point because most people who climb Kilimanjaro say one and done. Glad I did it. Never going back. You have done it four times now. Are you finally done, Art?
Well, I think I've done. I just met someone else recently who was about to do her third climb, and I asked her, "What's your excuse?" Mine was mental illness. Just kidding. My wife and I, we did this as sort of a party challenge 15 years ago. A friend of mine, I said, "I want some more adventure." This guy was an Everest climber. And he said, "Oh, I know what you should do. You should climb Kilimanjaro." I said, "You got to be kidding me. Climb Kilimanjaro." And my wife said, "Let's do it." It's like, let's do it. And the two of us climbed in 2011, 15 years ago. And she, 2 years later, she said, "Let's do it again." And we did. a few years after that, 5 years later, I had a reason to, I don't know, it got started again. She said, "You're on your own, Buster. I'm done climbing." So I did it alone. I did it with a group of young people, and they went, the pace was too fast for me. And so at 16,000 feet, I had to turn around, which was really important in more ways than one. One, it was the smart thing to do. But the second thing it did, it forced me to push my ego out of the way, because it's really easy to let your ego get wrapped up in this. And at my age, that could be a very dangerous mistake. So I went on this climb with the commitment ahead of time that if I had any trouble at all, I would turn around. Thanks to a wonderful guy, a brilliant guy who owns the company that took me up, and he's become a friend. I've climbed five mountains with him now. He said, if I say you're turning around, you're turning around, and we're going back down. And I said, I'll bet I beat you to that. If I need to turn around, you're going to hear it first from me. So he slowed the pace down. Previous climbs, we had done 9 days up and down, back to the bottom. And this one was 15 days long. He stretched it out, so my pace was okay, almost okay, for these 90-year-old legs. He got permission from the National Park Service in Tanzania for us to camp in places that are normally forbidden. Usually you must go in the designated campsites. And he basically said, that's too far for you. We'll run you ragged. So it was a carefully thought out climb. I barely made it each day. I mean, we'd get into camp around 1 o'clock and I would fall down on the cot. They brought a cot. They literally carried an aluminum cot up the mountain. So I was able to stretch out and lie down, which was very helpful. I've got one bad hip. I've got one good hip. It's artificial, put in a year ago. And I had another bad hip that we knew was going to go out. My orthopedic surgeon said, it's going to go out. I said, well, will I hurt it if I go on Kilimanjaro? He said, yeah, you really will. And I'm going to fix it. I'm putting in a new joint, right? So probably next month, I will have a new joint put in. And that means I can resume skiing in February.
You know, so many things you touched on that I want to follow up on, Art. By the way, folks, we're talking to Dr. Art Uhlein, the pioneering medical correspondent who has just become the oldest person to ever summit Mount Kilimanjaro. You mentioned that you summited with your wife when you guys were both about 75. And I understand that might make you also the oldest couple to ever summit Mount Kilimanjaro. Is that true?
Well, I'll tell you what's so interesting that you bring that up, because someone mentioned that possibility and said, why don't you apply sort of retroactively? You can do that to Guinness. And it just, we looked at what you had to do and it just seemed like so much work. And we said, you know, we'll just let that go. And someone said, well, what is the record for a single person? And we looked it up. It's 89 years and 27 days. That record was set by a woman several years ago who has climbed higher than the male record. And someone said, well, why don't you go for that one? Come on. And okay. Okay, we'll go for it. And I called Dean Cardinal, the owner of Worldwide Trekking. I said, what do you think? He said, I'll go with you. I said, all right, when are we going to do it? He said, you and I are going alone, so we have to find a special date. I said, alone? He said, you'll be going too slowly for the typical commercial customer. So he put together a special team. I had 22 people, young, strong, joyous young men from Tanzania who carried the entire tent, campsite, up on their backs, tents, cot, chairs, toilet, portable toilet. They carried to 18,000 feet for me. Amazing, amazing young people. And we'd leave camp in the morning. And around 10, 11 o'clock, they'd go running past us on the trail with the whole campsite on their shoulders or their head. And when by the time we got into camp at 1 o'clock, it was all rebuilt at the next site. Amazing experience. It is that kind of joyous thing that I think helps erase the pain.
You know, while we're talking about the porters, I understand they called you Babu or something like that, which means grandfather in Swahili. We talk a lot at Growing Boulder, Dr. Uline, about the importance of community, how important it is to surround yourself with the kind of energy that you just described. And I can remember at night, I climbed Kili one time enough, and just listening to the porters at night, you know, as you crash and you're so tired, you can barely think, and you don't understand a word that they're saying, but it is so melodic, it is so engaging, it's so interesting to listen to that cacophony, if you will, of human connection. It was joyous.
Well, I think the research is really pretty clear on this point, and that is that social connection plays a very critical role in longevity. Literally, people are socially engaged, live years longer than people who are isolated. It plays a very important role in what we call health span. That's the portion of your life that you spend in good health. And I want to be in good health till the day I die. When I die, I want them saying, how's that possible? He looked so good yesterday. and I'm really interested in a new idea that has come up, which is called peak span. I would like to stay as close as I can to my potential peak every year. And it's the reason why I've already bought my ski pass for next year. And I'm taking lessons. I learned late. I'm not a great skier, but I can ski pretty well. And I ski moguls sideways. I don't know if people understand moguls, but it's those bumps they set up on runs. And I have to ski sideways to stay in control. And I'm going to take lessons because I think it's time to learn how to ski straight downhill over the tops of those moguls. That's what I want to do.
I love it. I love every bit of it. Let me, if you will, you know, kind of try to draw another parallel between what you just did and what Growing Boulder does all the time, because I read where you said you're trying to inspire older adults, and you're certainly not trying to inspire 90-year-olds to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. No. We tell stories all the time, and I remember I spoke at a conference, and I shared a video of 93-year-old Banana George who wanted to barefoot water ski one final time. And when I was done, this major influencer, she's world-renowned, came up to me and said, you know, how can you encourage other older adults to go barefoot water skiing at 93? And I said, you totally misunderstood the whole point of that. All we're trying to get older adults to do is just realize that more is possible. And what you did, Art Uline, is you expanded the boundaries of possibility for everybody. You know, just to realize that more is possible than this ageist culture has led us to believe. So, do you offer this disclaimer when people say, how are you trying to inspire other older adults? Because you are unique. There's not too many 90-year-olds that even want to think about climbing, you know, a hill, let alone a 19,341-foot mountain.
Well, you and I are so very much on the same page, because I tell people specifically, no, don't try Mount Kilimanjaro. Try Mount Metaphor. For me, Kilimanjaro is a metaphor for life. The mountain has peaks and valleys. So does life. Ups and downs. I love to go back to this statement that Bob Dodson's mother made when he was growing up. Bob is an NBC correspondent. She used to say, if you don't climb the hill, Bobby, you can't see the view. So I encourage people to choose their own hill. Take some issue in life, some hurdle, some goal, and take the first small step toward that. People say, well, what's the first step? Well, there are several first steps. When it comes to activity, the first step is toward the front door. Open the front door and ask yourself, could I make it to the corner? Most people can. And ironically, most people don't. They don't walk to the corner. They drive to the post box on the corner. So walk to the corner. Can you make it back? Well, I got to make it back. Good, make it back. The next day, go to that front door and ask, could I make it around the block? Well, I'll try. And if people would just start small, I think what they would discover is that they have so much more potential than they ever imagined. The potential for eating better. You know, people say, well, you know, it's really hard. Wait a minute. Do you think you could eat a carrot? Yeah, I could eat a carrot. Well, let's start there. Eat a carrot. You're on your way. You've just eaten a healthy plant food. It's loaded with vitamin A. Maybe tomorrow we could try a tomato. My goal is not to get people to climb mountains, but to discover their potential. We leave so much potential as we grow older. And part of the reason is that we're living with this horrible stereotype of aging, which is that as we age, we must inevitably decline. No, no. Some people, let's be honest, some people, because of genetic problems, medical problems, even socioeconomic problems, may indeed decline as they grow older. But for the vast majority of us, growing older is an opportunity to discover all that hidden potential. And by the way, I think it's important to deal with the opposite end of that stereotype, which is that, oh, it's the golden age. Oh, you'll have all the time in the world and you'll be able to do anything you want. And no, some people can't do that. Again, either because of medical issues or socioeconomic issues. So let's just be fair and treat this as an opportunity for learning, an opportunity for growth. I mean, if you're not growing, you're falling behind. You're not standing still. So that's my approach. And it sounds like you and I are on exactly the same page when it comes to that.
Yes, we are. That is Dr. Art Uihlein, the Pioneering Network TV doctor, who at 90 has just become the oldest person in history to summit Mount Kilimanjaro. When we return, Dr. Uihlein's prescription for all of us, his keys to a long, happy, healthy life. This is Growing Bolder.
Sign up for the Growing Bolder Insider Newsletter. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingbolder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Bolder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingbolder.com/podcasts.
Welcome back to Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton. We're talking today with 90-year-old Dr. Art Uihlein, just back from becoming the oldest person in history to summit Mount Kilimanjaro. Of course, you don't undertake a grueling challenge like that at 90 if you don't have a Growing Bolder mindset. If you're not willing to challenge yourself, let's rejoin our conversation now as I ask Dr. Uihlein his thoughts on the importance of mindset as we age.
I'm ambivalent about the word mindset because it has the word set in it. And I don't think we should get so stuck that we have a firm mindset. So my mindset is constantly changing. I just sent a letter. Someone talked about writing, how you get stories for fiction. And they said, sit down in a chair and ask yourself the question, what if? What if? And I sat down and I wrote the words on the page, what if? And then I put a whole bunch of possibilities on that page. And when I got done with it, I ended up writing a letter to the CEO of a company saying, hey, what if you did this and I did that? We could do something important together. I'll give you an example from home. When I said I'm going to Kilimanjaro, my wife said, have a good time. I'm not. She said, two and I'm out. And so I said, well, what are you going to do? She said, I'm going to drive the United States for a month, and I'm going to visit every major contemporary art museum in the country and a few presidential libraries along the way. And she has a reason for doing that. She is 87 and works two jobs. She has two jobs, both part-time. One of them is at a contemporary art museum that has the world's finest private collection of modern and contemporary art. And she said, I just want to see what else is out there. I need it. She leads tours. And she said, I need to see more so I can do more. And I said, okay. So picture this. Here's an 87-year-old woman leaving for a month to drive the United States alone. Her friends all wanted to go. She said, no. I said, hey, I'd like to go with you. She said, no. And she went. Loved every single moment of it. So I said, I'm going to be back on the 20th of July. She said, well, I won't be back until the 1st of August. I was like, really? What? You know, like, why are you staying out so late? She said, I've got places to go, things to see. So you're on your own, Buster. Take good care of yourself. That's what growing older, bolder should be about. And let me tell you one of the benefits of that for me. I always used to say, if something happens to me, I don't say that anymore. When something happens to me, we're all going to die. Well, obviously, I'm referring to my death. When something happens to me, I know she'll be okay, because she has chosen to not allow age to limit her definition of who she is. I tell people, live up to your potential, not your age. And that's what she did, and she's doing to this very day.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that. Love to get you to weigh in. I mentioned Banana George, and that has me thinking about the last soundbite he gave us. Was when I asked him why he did it, he said, I don't wait for the next thing to happen. I make the next thing happen, even at 93. And, you know, as we get older, if we don't have that state of mind, I won't say mindset, if we don't make the next thing happen, very little will happen. We do end up on the couch. We do end up alone. What keeps you going? What keeps you intrigued with what's next?
Well, part of it is curiosity. I'd like to know who I am. I'd like to know what my potential is. It changes every year. I was able to climb faster 15 years ago than I can now. So I just like to know what the limits are. T.S. Eliot once said, I'm going to paraphrase him. He said, those who are unwilling to go to risk going too far can never possibly know how far they can go. So I'd like to know how far I can go. Now, I'm not stupid. Okay, if I got sick on the mountain, I'd turn around, all right? I'm going to go skiing. I've already bought my season pass for next year at Deer Valley. I'm planning to take ski lessons so I can learn to ski the bumps straight down. I was talking with a friend yesterday, guy who climbed Everest, if you can believe that, and he said, hey, how would you like to ski with Junior Bonus? I said, God, that name's familiar. He said, well, he's been the ski director of several resorts, and maybe the three of us could ski together. my friend's probably in his 70s. I said, well, I'd love to. And he said, Junior's 100, you know. And I thought, well, wouldn't that be fun? Our average age would be 95.
That will be fun.
So I want to be skiing. I'm already planning to see the 2034 Olympics. Okay, they're back in Utah. We can actually watch the downhill. We have a place up in Deer Valley. The downhill race course can be seen from our porch. So I'm planning to be sitting on my porch in 2034, 8 years from now. Now, how's that for optimism, huh?
That's great. If I could get just a few specifics from you, because there's lots of healthcare professionals out there who offer advice on healthy longevity, but there is only one who hasn't just learned it, but has actually lived it. One that is a 90-year-old board-certified physician and the oldest person ever to summit Mount Kilimanjaro. So please, if you will, could you give us a Dr. Art Uihlein prescription for living a long, healthy, happy life? What are the keys from your viewpoint to active longevity?
Well, the research is pretty clear on this. There are six things you can do that will not only increase your lifespan, but significantly improve your health right now, not 20, 30 years from now. Those are: be physically active. That doesn't mean you have to run marathons, but you do have to walk regularly. And you need to spend part of that walk at a little faster pace. Eat well. I mean, how in the world would you put water into your gas tank and expect the car to drive? So eat well. Get rid of the crap in your diet. Sleep better. Turn off the television set. That's not so hard to do. And get in bed a half hour earlier. Challenge your mind, not just with crossword puzzles, but tackle something big. Biggest thing I've ever done in my life was write a book. So I'm trying to write a book now. It's really frustrating, but it's good for my mind. My mind is waking up. Social connection is critical. And I'm not talking about texts to your friends. Pick up the phone and call someone you care about. Pick up the phone and call someone who's not well. Bring some food over to someone's house. Make a date together. It doesn't have to be expensive, but I think that's critical. And the other thing that is research proven is reduce the stress in your life. Doesn't mean you have to quit your job, but I'll tell you what I did. I sold my car. I couldn't stand the traffic in Los Angeles. I found myself swearing at another driver one day. I mean, that's a lethal combination. Anger and a car. Sold the car the next day. I have a bus pass now, and I go all around the city on buses. Now, I'm not saying you should sell your car. I mean, some people need their car. Clear the clutter. Start saying no to things you don't want to do. Clean your desk, clean your garage so your kids don't have to when you're gone. Simple stuff. And the last thing I do that is not so research proven is clean up your environment. Make your environment friendly so that some of these things I'm asking you to do are sort of automatic. Get the crap out of your closet and put vegetables in the refrigerator. So the only thing you can do when you get hungry is eat a vegetable. I mean, what's the big deal? Leave your walking shoes by the front door so that every time you walk in the door from your car, you say, I should have walked. You know, okay, I'll take a walk around the block. That's my formula. And if you do a little bit of all of these things, the effect is synergistic. You get a much more powerful result. So that's my advice. But start small. And what I would like to encourage people to do, I'd like to encourage older people to call their adult children and say, I need to get a little more fit. Will you do this with me? And I need adult children. I use that word children advisedly, but they're always your kids. adult children to call their 60, 70, 80-year-old parents and say, Mom, Dad, I'm a little worried about my health, and I've decided to start walking more and eating better. Would you do it with me? It would help me stay on track. And I think that could be a very, very powerful combination, because both generations have an interest in keeping the other one healthy, don't they?
Couldn't agree more. God bless you, Dr. Art Ulane. Folks, he is the oldest person to ever summit Mount Kilimanjaro. He is the pioneering physician who inspired healthy living for decades on TV. And as you heard, he is still getting it done by example at the age of 90. Dr. Art, congratulations on the climb, and thank you for the inspiration. Can't wait to read the book.
Thank you for what you're doing. I really appreciate the chance to talk about this.
Up next, we'll dip into the archives for a GB classic, our interview with Tony Tennille, one half of the 1970s pop duo Captain and Tennille. This is Growing Bolder. Stay connected to Growing Bolder for daily doses of hope, inspiration, and possibility. Find us on YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram for our latest stories, reels, and motivational memes. Welcome back to Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton. Back in the 70s, Tony Tennille and her husband, Daryl Dragon, a.k.a. Captain and Tennille, were Grammy-winning pop legends with a string of hits like Muskrat Love, Do That to Me One More Time, and their biggest number one hit, their signature song, Love Will Keep Us Together. But ultimately, it did not for Tony and Daryl. After 39 years of marriage, Tony filed for divorce and wrote a book about their relationship. Let's pick up this Growing Bolder classic when we asked Tony about her decision to share intimate details of their breakup.
Well, you know, for years, people, friends and fans and so forth, have said, when are you going to write a memoir, Tony? Everybody does, you know. And I said, I'm not going to, and I had no intention of doing it. Because also at that time I was living, Daryl and I were living in Prescott, Arizona. I was living a very quiet life, just, you know, working at the hospital with my dog Smokey and doing a lot of dog things and just leading a normal life, not doing any, national media at all, because I was trying to figure out what I was going to do about my marriage to Daryl. It took me a very, very long time and a lot of thinking and a lot of support from my very loving family and my good friends, in Prescott, my Council of Wise Women, I call them. We actually have two men in that council, but we mostly call it that. And a really good therapist who helped me make the decision I needed to make. And then once I had done that, I felt I owed it to the fans who I knew would be, some of them would just be, you know, almost devastated by the news, to explain my thinking and why I did what I did, hoping that they would understand. And, you know, it's interesting, most of the people I've heard from, I would say 85% are right there with me and tell me their own stories. I've read the most incredible stories from people, thank you for your book, because this was my life too. So for that reason, I'm really glad I did it.
You know, Tony, the celebrity really does make a big difference, because we think, wow, if that can happen to her, maybe I'm not a failure, or maybe it's not my fault. And in Hollywood, and with, you know, bands break up all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Marriages break up. And usually it's under the stress of success or the spotlight. But you hung in for so long. Was that the right decision, or should you have stopped this years ago?
You know, I don't regret one decision I made. I'm a very, I guess you could say I'm a Taurus. We're supposedly loyal and stubborn. And I was convinced that if I just had enough time, I could bring Daryl into, into the light, so to speak. A quick explanation. My family has always been very loving. You know, my mom and my dad and my three sisters, and I was raised in that kind of an atmosphere. Daryl was raised in a completely different atmosphere. His family was not affectionate at all. His father, although a very famous Academy Award-winning film scorer and symphony conductor, he was very, very hard on his kids, very critical of all of them, all five of them, and they all suffered to some degree from his criticism, constant criticism, and other things that he did. And so Daryl was just closed into himself, just closed in. And I thought, well, you know, I can teach him what love is, and I can bring him out to have some joy maybe in his life. But I just never was able to do it. I tried and tried, and I just couldn't do it. So,
and now that you know, Tony, that you couldn't and that you didn't, I think as we get older, we all learn that the most valuable currency we all have is time. You spent 40 years with this guy. Do you regret those years, or has it been an experience that pretty much informs you today and where you're going in the future?
Well, I think for all of us, every experience we have, good and bad, we learn something from it. But I'll have to tell you, I just absolutely adored Daryl from the first time I ever saw him. And the time that I spent with him was the most creative that I've probably ever had in my life. I would say I sparked him. I was his muse. He was my muse. I wrote some of the best songs I've ever written because of him, and I think he did some of his best work too, and in a way people think I gave up a lot. I didn't really. I actually acquired a lot of knowledge and about the music that I was writing. He was great at that, and I can't ever regret it. I will tell you this though, Mark and Bill, Daryl and I are still friends. I talk to him regularly, at least every week or 10 days. And when I started to write the memoir, when Caroline, my niece, agreed to write it with me, I called him and I said, you know, Daryl, I'm going to write the memoir. And I said, I want you to understand, and I know you do, that this is my point of view of what happened with us. And I said, please feel free to write your own or a blog, because people would love to hear from you, which they would. And he said, no, I'm not going to do that. And he said, I'm not worried. You've always been a straight shooter. And he knew I was, and I am, and that I would be fair. The interesting thing is that Caroline and I just got back from New York, where we did a whole bunch of media in 3 days. We were on the Today Show and Inside Edition, and when we were driving back from New York headed home to JFK, I called him to see how he was doing. And he said, I just saw your interview on the Today Show. And I said, oh, I said, what did you think? And he said, and I quote, I was proud of you, unquote. And he went on to tell me that he'd also finally discovered that all these years that he'd feared he had Parkinson's disease, he doesn't have it. He found that definitively recently, and he had a wonderful feeling. I heard a sound of relief in his voice, and I think this separation and divorce is not only going to work for me, but it's going to work for him. It's kind of shaken him up a little to reality and going back and thinking, you know, well, wow, what did I do with my life that maybe I should have changed a little bit? But I'm happy for him. He's a genius. He just, I never heard him belly laugh the entire time we lived together, ever. He just is been within himself. So I think he may start coming out of himself and into the world, and I'm happy about that.
You know, Tony, one of the reasons that it's so important that you put yourself through, I'm sure there's personal angst in laying your cards out on the table like this, but this isn't like an Ike and Tina Turner kind of a story. There's not a bad guy. You're just like, you know, so many other couples where it just didn't work for whatever reason. So now, you know, you're in your mid-70s and you're single and you can do what do you want to do now with your life?
Well, you know, when all of this media craziness is over with the memoir, you know, we're in our second printing already. Caroline and I are headed to LA on the 26th to do 5 days of media there. And then when all this quiets down and I feel like I've given the book the best shot I can give it, I'm going to take a little break and see where life takes me. I'm just going to go with the flow. One of the things that I never liked about being, you know, up there in the public eye all the time was the constant worry. What am I going to wear? What's my makeup? What's my hair? I hated walking the red carpet. I'd love to do things, perhaps some voice work for other authors, maybe read the books for them like I did my own book. It's out there on Audible. And do some voicing for animated films and things like that. So that way I can just go in the studio in my casual clothes with no makeup or hair problems and do what I love to do without having to be out there all the time.
What's the takeaway? What do you hope that we learn or come away with after hearing your story?
Well, I'm hoping that the fans who were so disappointed will understand. Like I say, most of the feedback has been fabulous. I've had a few of the "Who cares what that old lady thinks?" and you know, "Why is she airing her dirty laundry in public?" And none of them have read the book, so I think if they read it, they would understand. But most of it has just been people sharing with me, and I hope they understand that if they're in a toxic relationship that is bringing them down with the other person, that they will know that they deserve to have happiness.
Tony Tennille turned 86 this year, and while she has remained mostly private in recent years, she did briefly come out of retirement at age 82 to star in a special regional production of Hello, Dolly. Up next, she left the corporate world to see the world, the inspiring story of travel icon Beverly Marshall Looney. This is Growing Bolder.
Sign up for the Growing Bolder Insider newsletter. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingbolder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Bolder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingbolder.com/podcasts.
Welcome back to Growing Bolder. You know, almost everyone has a dream they've deferred. After adversity, Beverly Marshall Looney didn't just change careers, she changed the story that she believed about what was possible later in life. She chose curiosity over comfort and gave herself permission to live the life she dreamed of, a life that has brought her adventure, joy, and friendship, not just to herself, but to thousands of others as well. More than a dozen years ago, we met Beverly Marshall Looney at a crossroads. After decades climbing the corporate ladder, a series of devastating health setbacks forced her to ask a simple question. What if the best part of life was still ahead?
I broke an ankle, I broke a knee, I broke a wrist, I had a blood infection, all within like a 4-year period. And that's really when I started to recognize that quality of life really is centered around healthy lifestyles.
One muscle group at a time.
As she rebuilt her health, she rediscovered a little girl's dream inspired by visits to her local library.
I was in a National Geographic book, visiting someplace that I could only dream of.
That's when she made the decision that changed everything. She walked away from the career that had defined her and toward a future she couldn't yet see.
I kind of knew where I was going, but I didn't know how to get there.
Where she was going was everywhere, to the places she'd first discovered in the pages of National Geographic nearly 60 years earlier. She didn't just change careers, she changed the story she believed about what was possible later in life.
I don't live in a spirit of fear, which means that instead of trying to connect to a travel agency and walk and move up the ranks, I wanted to be the boss from the very beginning. I had to pull that strength from myself, and I had to encourage myself, and I had to say that this is not my last rodeo. I've got a whole bunch of living to do, and I need to be able to get out there and do it.
In 2014, she founded Platinum Tours International, not just to show people famous landmarks, but to immerse them in cultures, histories, and human connections. Her signature, Where in the World is Bev Adventures, have taken travelers from Egypt and Machu Picchu to the Holy Land, Nepal, Greece, Africa, and countless places in between.
I never wanted to go anywhere and just take a picture in front of the Eiffel Tower and say, look, this is where I went. Is that I want to hear about the architect. I want to hear about how and why they did what they did. I want to talk to the people. I couldn't ask for more, and I love traveling with the people that go with me. I love the fact that my groups are multicultural, multi-age groups. They're my friends, they're my fun, they're the ones that literally will say to me, oh, but God, look at this. Look at what we're seeing and doing together.
Every journey eventually ends, but the memories never do. At home, every room, every shelf, every wall tells another story.
I could walk in here in the complete dark, and if one picture was moved, I would know it, because every single thing in here has a significant and a valuable place in my heart.
Years ago, Beverly Marshall Looney admitted to lying about her age.
I want to lie about my age a long time.
How old are you?
100.
Today, surrounded by family, friends, and fellow adventurers, she stopped lying about her age, not because the number matters, but because it doesn't.
I confessed, I'm 77.
What's it like being 70?
I don't know. It's nothing but a number. Because I don't think that we should be defined by the number of times we go around the sun.
But rather by our willingness to chase a total eclipse of the sun. Bev's next adventure takes her and her travelers to Mallorca, Spain, to witness the first total solar eclipse there in more than 120 years. A magical moment they'll share forever.
We have 6 singles that are going that don't even think that they're going to be singles because they know that they're going to be a part of a unit.
A unit reminding us all that growing older isn't about counting the years. It's about continuing to collect experiences worth remembering. Take a tip from Bev and a prescription from Dr. Art Uihlein. Don't be afraid to say yes to life, to opportunity, to adventure. Don't be afraid to take calculated risk. Of course, you don't have to climb a mountain in your 90s or start a new business in your 60s, but trying new things, challenging yourself, being open to new experiences and new relationships are keys to a happier and healthier life. Sure, we all have challenges and limitations, but we also have the ability to love our lives no matter those challenges. As we like to say here at Growing Bolder, it's not about age, it's about attitude. We'll see you next time.
The Growing Bolder Radio Show is a production of Growing Bolder, LLC, all rights reserved. This program was recorded at Growing Bolder Studios in Orlando and is available as a weekly podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Spotify, and TuneIn. It is written and produced by Jill Middleton, Mark Middleton, and Bill Schaefer. Technical director is Jason Morrow. Production manager is Michael Nanis. And our most important team member, you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep growing bolder every day.